Welcome to episode 67 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson, Michael Lucas Smith, and Dave Buck. This week, we continue our conversation with Craig Latta on the Spoon Project. If you have feedback on this or any other episode, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, our iTunes page, or head on over to Podcast Alley or the Small Talkers group on Ning.
So how big is the VM you're using right now?
The VM I'm using is still a normal Squeak size, or I should say a Squeak VM that's had, you know, all the obviously non-essential plugins taken out of it, but no real serious effort put into it. I think it's about 200K. One of the things I want to do in the future is apply the same minimization work I've been doing on the rest of the object memory to the Squeak's virtual machine implementation, which, of course, is part of the object memory. So I think I'll be able to eliminate a fair amount of dead code from there and actually make the VM smaller.
Is anybody else working on this project with you, or is this kind of a solo effort at this point?
Well, as I was saying before, yeah, it's so complicated that it's hard to, get other people to, you know, commit a significant amount of time over long durations for it. But, I am working, at least consulting people about design decisions and so forth. I am working with a bunch of other people on it. I guess the people who are closest to it are Alan Lovejoy and a few of the folks on the Squeak IRC channel. Brenda Larkham has helped out quite a bit.
Okay, so remote debugging.
Yeah.
Just before we go there, I just want to confirm, you kind of advocate having code without source code, right? You take bytecodes and turn it back into regular source?
This is one of Michael's hobby horses right here.
Oh, I just want to make it optional. I think it's been a very long-standing problem for Smalltalk that it's had to rely on using source code as the only means of exchange for behavior between systems. And yeah, by making it optional, you know, I don't want to confuse anybody. I don't want to, you know, force them to throw anything away that they don't want to, that they would actually like to have. But yeah, I just don't want to rely on it for transferring behavior for, you know, distributing systems.
As far as source code transmission, that's pretty much a problem if you're talking between small talks. As far as I know, every small talk, now I'm not deeply familiar with Squeak, but I assume they have some binary transfer mechanism as well. I know certainly VisualWorks and Object Studio do. Visual Age has had something for years. I assume Dolphin has some mechanism whereby you can transfer code without transferring source. So are we talking in a cross-dialect fashion? Because within individual dialects, I know that problem's been solved.
Oh, well, actually, I guess, yeah, the important thing to me really is not whether it's like human-readable or binary or whatever, but the fact that it's static or dynamic. To come up with a complete description of what you're transferring before you do it, that's the problem I'm really
having.
As opposed to having an interactive conversation between systems about what to transfer. And one obvious benefit of that is it may turn out that, by having an interactive dialogue between the two systems, you can decide that, oh, I really only need this one method, actually. So you don't have to create this humongous ball of stuff to transfer across.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're trying to figure out a more appropriate way to figure out how to transfer the minimum necessary, as opposed to, say, using a system I'm more familiar with, VisualWorks. I can toss a parcel at an image, but if that parcel is already 95% there, I still have to load the whole thing just to get the differences.
Yeah, so you've used more time thinking about making that parcel than you did need to, and also more time actually transferring it across. Although, again, just like disk space, network speed has, you know, become a lot faster too. But I also want to make the transfer a lot more articulate. Being able to say, you know, very precisely, I want this version of this behavior by this author, and also to be able to set up, you know, sees between things in a completely accurate way.
Okay.
I suspect that only by having a live conversation between the provider and the consumer can you actually achieve that.
So remote debugging then. You essentially have your Spoon system running and then connect to it from Squeak to program it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this is instead of doing surgery on yourself, you're doing surgery on another image.
This is kind of like what the Gemstone guys are doing with their glass thing, from what I understand.
Right, and that was my first approach to making a smaller object memory. You know, classically, the problem with it has been, you know, while you're trying to do this, you break the UI and, you know, destroy your ability to proceed. So I just wanted to get the UI out of my way. So I just created this a very simple way of doing remote messaging, you know, copying the object memory, and so that I had two of them, and then from one of them send messages to the other one to get it to do stuff. And if the UI broke in the target, that was fine because I wasn't using that UI anymore. I was using the UI of a separate system. Since then, I've come up with a different way of getting rid of methods that aren't being used, which ends up having this chain reaction, getting rid of all sorts of junk. So my whole stripping process is no longer really interactive at all. But that ability is, yeah, very useful for doing things like remote debugging. And to actually get remote debugging to work properly, I had to sort of elaborate my simple remote messaging scheme to be able to handle multiple Smalltalk processes and to send messages to results of earlier remote messages and things like that.
So what is roughly the minimum set of messages a remote system has to understand to be to have surgery applied to it?
You're looking like for a number of messages, or
You know, things like, you know, obviously you need to be able to do inst var add, inst var out put, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, you need most of the reflection support at the basic object level. I actually, yeah, have a list. That's another link I can paste in. Another list of things which survived. But as to which of them were needed explicitly for doing remote debugging, yeah, I haven't actually compiled that list yet. Although it would be pretty easy to do.
Do you still have the full metaclass hierarchy, the classes with metaclasses and the metaclass class and its class?
Yeah, I decided to keep that for now. That's a good point. That could probably be dispensed with. but for now, there are some things that, even though I say I'm trying to go for an absolutely minimal system, there are some things that I've just sort of conceded that in any actual system that I'm likely to make with this stuff, there are several things that would get swapped back in almost immediately, no matter what I was building. And a few of those I've just for now decided to leave in, like the metaclass architecture.
I've got two more questions. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to ask about collections hierarchies. Ordered collections are probably gone. Dictionaries probably stay. What kinds of collections do you keep and what do you throw away?
Yeah, let's see. I should really go and get a link from this list of things that survived. I should probably answer another question while I'm typing that in.
Okay, I'll go. So I saw the other day that you posted about a new version control system for Spoon. I thought you might like to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of these ideas are sort of embodied in a subsystem of Spoon that I'm calling NIAD, which is an acronym for Name and Identity Are Distinct. And that's goes back to the stuff I was talking about earlier of having another object memory, another little object memory, listening to everything you do, say whenever you add a class or add a method or remove a method or whatever. And it's basically a very small special purpose object database for storing records of these changes. And they use these behavior IDs and method IDs to, you know, record everything you've done. And And it's used both when you want to ask questions like what version of this behavior is installed right now, and also when you want to do things like install a previous version of some particular method. So it's basically a replacement for the sources and changes files. And instead of using, expressions in a chunk format, it's using this simple database thing.
So you're capturing every change that's made to an image, though. Or actually, image might be the wrong term here. But so conceptually, that sounds to me kind of similar to what Envy is doing.
Right. Yeah, and I actually had an interesting conversation with Dave Thomas about this stuff a couple of years ago.
If we had known that, we would have asked him about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah. he seemed to like it. I guess the main difference between this stuff and the Envy stuff is that it's a lot less centralized. Every person's object memory has this little system listening to them. And you can get those little listening systems to, form these little federations of object memories so that people can be aware of what other people are doing in their object memories and, perhaps use that to head off conflicts before they occur or just generally try to get people to communicate better about what they're doing, say, if they're part of a team.
Okay, so given that, this ought to be a little friendlier over, say, a WAN than Envy would be because Envy is too chatty, really, to use over a WAN.
Yeah, I think so.
So, if you haven't found that list, I've got the next question on my list, which is basically when you start getting to this sort of level, how do you deal with the temptation to fork off from Smalltalk ANSI or Smalltalk ADI and evolve this into its own language?
And we reach another one of Michael's little hobby horses.
Yeah, well, and that's actually the main reason why the system is called Spoon. That was the first pun that I thought of in the long list of Spoon puns that has since grown. And that is, it's not a fork of Squeak, it's a spoon of Squeak. And what I mean by that is that it's a fork that may be eventually, reintegrated into the mainstream. I'm actually thinking one possible option is that Spoon may become the next, major version of Squeak, Squeak 4, maybe Squeak 5.
So rather than run off on your own as a fork, you'd like to convince the community to come with you.
It's sort of like herding cats. I don't know if convince is the right word, but I'm hoping that people...
Declare.
that all depends, yeah. Just sort of hoping that what I create is attractive enough to people that they want to use it. Usually the only realistic thing hope you can have anyway.
Scoopy is Squeak 7.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So let's see. That link here. Yeah. netgem.org/spoon/space.txt.
Yep, I've got that link now. I'll put that in the notes.
Yeah. And I see... ordered collection is still in there, so I'm using it for something. So, and that's another actually good little cue to talk about the visualization stuff again. When I got to a certain point, even though I had that first still photo that I could click on and see, what was what, that was still a little bit, difficult. I mean, there's still, what are the totals here? 5,000 objects in the in the object memory these days, an actual useful one that you can talk to and install code in. So I wanted to have an even more useful way of visualizing stuff. So another change to the Squeak VM simulator I've made is actually have it put out a reference graph of all the objects in the system that I could feed into a 3D graph manipulation program and actually explore around in 3D all these object references and get a sense of where there were large clusters of objects and figure out what those were and use that to do the the final pruning of stuff in the system. So I suspect things like ordered collection may fall prey to that technique in the end. So there's a potentially of one point in time of the object memory in 3D on the spoon site. That's kind of cute.
It's amazing how much stuff there is in this tiny image. This particular image is how big?
That one is 160K. I think it says at the bottom in the total there.
And this space.txt document is the list of all the things that are in that image, right?
Right, right. It's a few months old, but it's, yeah, generally.
Yeah, yeah. I think it says 160K, roughly speaking. And it's certainly got less stuff than, I don't know, if you download the Squeak one-click experience for Seaside, it's certainly going to be bigger than this. And if you download VisualWorks Non-Commercial, it's certainly going to be bigger than this. But it's actually a fairly rich set of behavior, considering how small it is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and it does all this funky remote debugging and remote code installation stuff. I know it's old because it's got System Dictionary in there.
Yeah, that's one of the points on your list here is remove System Dictionary. So you're in deleting System Dictionary, that goes back to what you were talking about, objects not needing names. Is that correct?
Right, right. And, sort of eliminating names is a point of confusion about what people are talking about when they refer to behaviors. Yeah, so instead, and this is a little slower, but instead you just do a search from the root of your class hierarchy to find the class with the base UUID that you have in mind. That's the usual way of referring to a behavior.
So I guess my final question then is, if you grab this tiny spoon image and you want to get going, spoon doesn't really have a REPL at all, does it?
Actually, I've started building one as part of another project I've been working on called Quoth. And yeah, I think I'm most of the way there with that. If you go to netgem.org/quoth, you can read about that. It's sort of this weird music making system disguised as a text adventure game.
that's weird.
There's a fun little movie there that you can see a little demo of that. But and that basically is the basis of a command line for Squeak. It's, you know, very affected, I guess, with the whole Infocom-esque sort of nature of it. But I've also been working on something that looks more like, you know, a Unix shell.
So this, I mean, right now it's kind of hard for people to just jump in there and have a go at Spoon.
You have to download two object memories, one that you can use as a controller and another one which is an actual target. And you have to make sure they're talking to each other, you know, correctly. And yeah, so it's still, the current release is still, you know, sort of a hard hat thing.
Michael, to compare it, it's on the order of trying to build a bottom feeder development image.
I don't think it's that bad. One of the things that's sort of embryonic in, say, Croquet and I guess here in Spoon as well, is the kind of ability for the system to have its own ecosystem kickstart itself. You know, being able to download Spoon, start it up, and have it connect into a live network of Spoon images that provide behavior and things like that isn't quite there yet. Is that one of the goals to eventually have it so you start up Spoon and it joins in the global community of Spoons?
Yeah, exactly. And the beginnings of that are in the, I guess, 2 Alpha 12 releases, the current one. What happens now when you start it up, Tiny Spoon Image starts up a little web server, and the web page where you got Spoon from redirects your web browser to that little web browser now running locally on your system from there. So now you're talking to a little Spoon system that has, you know, almost nothing in it, and it'll tell you, it'll sort of act as your interface through a web browser to what other Spoon systems are out there and what modules they have, so that you can start loading up stuff and doing things.
Now, I'm curious about the protocol you're going to use for that. Are you going to use any of the commercial-grade protocols that are out there, or is Spoon going to be using its own homebrew protocol for exchanging that kind of information?
Well, just to show something working, I'm writing something simple on my own. But, yeah, I have nothing against using something that's been, you know, banged on by more people. And
well, I don't even have a suggestion that way, because this is not really anything vaguely like my area of expertise. I was just curious.
Yeah, and I haven't done a whole lot of research into what I could do instead.
Well, peer-to-peer service discovery sort of steps into the realm of eDonkey and Napster and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, there has to have been a ton of work done on discovery issues for those systems.
Well, you could just reverse engineer Skype and use that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, it wouldn't actually help you in this case. Maybe XMPP might be more appropriate. But
or Rendezvous, or, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. We have an MP3 question that we should be answering, don't we?
Oh, yeah. You know, I sent that to you guys, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you did.
Well, Craig can answer too while he's on here. Oh, except that when you play it, we won't hear it.
You might hear it if you played it.
You want me to play it?
Yeah, go ahead and play it. I think if you play it, I think certainly it should come through on the podcast that way. You can see the high technology we use for this kind of thing, Craig.
Excellent.
Speak it through a microphone.
Yeah, and I'm recording all of this, by the way. So if you ever want, for some reason, a high-quality version of my voice,
okay,
from here, I can give it to you.
Good. I should have two copies of the audio myself. Like I said, I use a hijacking program to collect from Skype, and then I also pull this all over through Audacity on my Mac.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm doing roughly the same thing. So if both of those somehow die, yeah, there's another one here.
Right. I've had one of them die on at least three occasions now, so I like having a backup locally.
So how are you doing there, Michael?
Yeah, almost got it. I just had to find it. For some reason, I was looking for it under James Savage's name. James is the one who sent it, but James Robertson was the one who sent it to me. So
yeah, I forwarded it to you. He sent it to me, and then I sent it to you.
Yeah, now I'm just following the trail of what I did last time, which was to copy it to the music directory, then double-click on it.
So can I mention one more thing about Spoon?
Yeah,
yeah. Go ahead.
I'm writing a Spoon book, which I hope will answer, you know, any question anyone might have about Spoon.
Could I suggest you call it Silverware? Well, actually, perhaps the whole network of spoons should be cutlery or silverware.
Yeah, cutlery, that's a good one. So I'm hoping that it'll also provide a more accessible, introduction for people for all this stuff. And it's modeled loosely on the format of the Blue Book, which I still really like.
Okay, I've got this thing here. Now the question is, if I play it, will you hear it?
Well, give it a try.
Okay.
Let's see what happens.
Hey guys, this is James Savage. Listening to and reading about the various efforts to provide alternate language embedding in Smalltalk has worried me a little. If you can dynamically bind C or assembly inside an image, doesn't that open up the programs to code injection hacks and exploits? Especially if you're running your code on a server, wouldn't your security risk be lower without those capabilities? Thanks.
Yeah, he's talking about those posts that you've made to your blog about embedding assembly language and probably the stuff that Anthony Blakey has been doing.
And yes. The stuff I've been doing.
Yeah, and the stuff that you've been doing, Gabe. Yeah, that's right.
So it's an interesting question. I think I could almost head it off by saying, it's not actually the JVM. There was never a kind of promise of magic sandbox security from a Smalltalk VM, though that kind of sounds – I'm not sure that's the right kind of message to send out. You kind of have to allow this sort of stuff to happen in your image when you kick it off. You have to – if you got some sort of input from another system, you'd have to allow that to compile methods. So it is actually not incredible. It's not that easy to inject assembly language or C dynamically into a running server. You sort of have to introduce it as a backdoor, and doing that by accident is pretty hard to do. You'd have to do it reasonably deliberately, because we're talking about compilation of a method and installation into a method dictionary.
If you leave a web app, an application running on the web, for instance, and you leave an interface whereby somebody can type code in a browser and have it start running in the server, you've kind of already asked for trouble, whether you're asking them to type in Smalltalk or assembly or C or whatever. I don't think the language is all that relevant there. It's that if you've left a way for people to put code into your image, it becomes completely irrelevant what kind of code you're injecting.
Now, the question is relevant for some of this work that I'm doing on allowing images or C programs to talk to an image through sockets or shared memory.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's relevant to Spoon too. So just finish, Dave, and then we'll get Craig to talk about it as well.
Right. In terms of shared memory, that's less of a concern because you have to be running in the same process with a different thread. And it's very hard for some sort of Trojan horse or anything like that to get in that way. With the socket connection, right now, the way it's designed, yes, another socket or another program could open up a socket to your system if they have access to your port. But the socket communication is completely under the control of Smalltalk. So Smalltalk could require some sort of validation or authentication from the caller before accepting connections in and running the commands.
And I'll note that in OpenTalk, not that this is completely related, but in OpenTalk, you do have a minimalistic security thing where you can list a set of selectors that is allowable. So that's not completely safe by any stretch of the imagination, but you can at least limit the damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Spoon, sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, in Spoon, what do you do for security?
Oh, yeah. At the moment, I'm not doing a whole lot, but I eventually want to integrate the very promising work that has been done for Squeak on integrating OpenSSL into a fairly low level in the connections made between systems.
I think ultimately the answer that comes out to this to a very large extent is that it's almost the Spider-Man answer that with great power comes great responsibility, and that if you're going to leave an interface open whereby code can be inserted into an image dynamically, you have to be pretty certain that you trust the entities that you're allowing to do that.
I plan to be putting most of the work into making sure that the initial connection is established only with someone you trust. And you know, after that point, there will still be some affordances for making sure they're not doing anything really screwy. But at that point, yeah, the horse is pretty much out of the barn.
Anybody have any closing thoughts on that?
Trust networks, that sort of thing. Still not solved. So I guess in the kind of the final word on this is there's no system around that will actually entirely protect you from this sort of thing, not even Java.
And I just want to put in a plug for, you know, that's a good thing, I think, for actually doing new things and having a lot of, you know, power. I only want to work with systems that allow me to shoot me in the foot. If they, you know, do too much to prevent that, it usually ends up being a bigger problem in some other way.
Yeah, well, even Java, if you want to take a look at what Java's been doing over the last 3, 4, 5 years, they've been progressively opening up that way. So even the designers of more closed-off systems like Java recognize that you have to allow that kind of thing if you want to be productive.
Alan Knight had a good quote once. We were talking about Smalltalk development and how easy it is to shoot yourself in the foot. And Alan said, well, at least in Smalltalk, you can, if you shoot yourself in the foot, you can take your foot, go in and repair it, stick it back on, and it'll work fine.
That's right.
Well, that may not be the case in Spoon. If you shoot the wrong bit of the foot off, you may lose your ability to communicate.
You'll have to ask someone else for, you know, your foot. I stopped floating around recently.
Please.
Very good. I think we've pretty much come to the end here.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Craig, for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed that.
All right. And I'll have this out, I guess, in not next week. It'll be out the week after this, and actually this went long enough that we'll call this a two-parter, so
that takes us to the end of the year, right?
Takes us to the end of the year, so I think you'll be back to being upside down before we record again.
Yep.
Cool.
Very good. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And here's James Savage with this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Coeur d'Alene, Indiana. Cincy Engineering and PDS Technical Services are looking for a database administrator who has experience with Access, Excel, SQL, SQL Server, and Visual Basic. Experience with DB2 and Smalltalk are considered pluses. Minneapolis, Minnesota. Precision System Design is looking for a Smalltalk developer who also has experience with Java. Chicago, Illinois. Hewitt Associates is looking for a tech developer analyst who has a Bachelor of Science degree in computer science, good communication skills, object-oriented programming experience or education, and experience with OOAD. Experience that is considered a plus includes data modeling, database design and management, Hewitt's Calc Builder Calc Engine, impact analysis tools, relational databases, Smalltalk, structured programming, system testing, TBA functional knowledge, and TBA project process. This is a permanent position. San Antonio, Texas. Bestica has a contract position for a software packager who has experience with release management, Java.NET and Smalltalk packaging, Altruis software delivery, shell scripts, VB script, Windows XP, Wise packaging products, Microsoft Office, and has excellent communication skills. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
Here's Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. As you design your classes, you'll find that some methods know the instance variables of the class and directly reference them. Other methods don't need to know the representation, and they'll call the other methods in order to get the work done. The first set of methods are what I call core methods. Core methods know what the instance variables are and how those instance variables work, how the class is structured, and so forth. The non-core methods just call the core methods to get their work done, or they may call other non-core methods. As a general design rule, it's best to try to make the core methods as small as possible and as few as possible, so that there aren't very many methods that know how the class is actually structured. If you can move most of the functionality to utility methods that just call the core methods, your system will be more maintainable. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And that wraps up this week's episode of Industry Misinterpretations, our two-part episode with Craig Latta. Come back next week for our year-end wrap-up of the year in Smalltalk. In the meantime, please send any feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or head on over to iTunes, Facebook, Ning, or Podcast Alley. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.
To you, I gotta be